SiriusXM presents Stanford Pathfinders.
Stanford has 225,000 alumni living all over the globe in 151 countries, and they're some of the most amazing people you would ever want to meet.
A show about how the graduates of Stanford University are changing our lives and the world.
We'll hear very interesting things from business leaders in the technology sector, but well beyond that, the worlds of politics, entertainment, business, and beyond.
Inspiring stories from America's innovation heartland.
It's a place where people look to the future, not to the past, where they don't rest on their laurels. Think about the gold rush. Think about Stanford being formed in the late 1800s. And then Stanford was the beginning of Silicon Valley. And the ethos of Silicon Valley is deeply embedded in the Stanford spirit. It's a spirit of innovation, experimentation. It's a spirit of being willing to try new things and risk failure as long as you fail forward.
Welcome to Stanford Pathfinders.
Co-authors of the 80-80 Marriage, a new model for happier, stronger marriage.
We wanted to share the fact that we were stuck, really stuck at various points in our marriage. And we thought that would be important because, you know, that was our journey.
When Nate has a phenomenal day, I feel like I win. When I land a new client, we win as a family. And so that's the idea, is framing it as, how do we win together?
This week on Stanford Pathfinders, Nate and Kaylee Klemp. Now, here's your host, Howard Wolf.
Relationships can be difficult, and marriage can be particularly challenging. We all struggle at times with balancing career, family, and love. And as we try to achieve this utopian balance, our relationships often suffer. Unfortunately, these challenges often lead to divorce, a reality that befalls nearly 40% of all marriages in the U.S. these days. A reality that not only affects the couple getting divorced, but others as well, including children and other family members. Today's guests on Stanford Pathfinders are a married couple who were undergraduates together at Stanford. Most importantly, they are a happily married couple. Their happy marriage, however, was not automatic. They have worked diligently on making their marriage work. And to the benefit of the rest of us, they have written a best-selling book on this topic entitled The 80-80 Marriage, a new model for a happier, stronger relationship. The book is a highly accessible, transformative guide for couples seeking greater love, connection, and intimacy in our modern world. And who doesn't want more love, connection, and intimacy? Kaylee and Nate, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us. Psyched to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, so I'd like to start all our Pathfinder shows with essentially the same question. What are your Stanford origin stories? Why Stanford?
Yeah, well, I can start. For me, Stanford was like a childhood dream. So we had friends in Palo Alto who we'd visit every summer. And then when I was 16, I was a jazz piano player. I went to the Stanford Jazz Camp and I stayed in the old Theodelt house. And I was just completely hooked. You know, I'm playing piano all day in the music center and running around Lake Log and the Dish. And I thought, if I can get into this place, this is where I'm meant to be.
Fantastic.
One of the things that I think is really funny about our story is that we actually started dating in high school a couple of weeks before we each got into Stanford. And then I'm not sure what we were thinking exactly. I guess that love would come back to us, but we broke up right before we went to Stanford. So our love story is sort of the before and the after.
That we never dated at Stanford.
Never at Stanford, which is
but
so
did
funny.
Did you go to the same high school?
Yeah.
We went to Boulder High School. So we met in Boulder here. Yeah.
Oh my word. That's a fantastic story. All right. So you're both Stanford graduates, as we've just identified. How did your time at Stanford influence this book about marriage?
Well, so it's such a great question because one of the things that Stanford teaches us is we are meant to do meaningful things, to create impact in the world. And so each of us internalized that when we were at school. Hey, to whom much is given, much is expected. But that actually set us on a bit of a collision course when we got married, that we were both so committed to doing everything that we could to make the world a better place. But then when it was like, and now be a team, and now be married, and now sort of be devoted to each other, we were like, wait a second, there's a total conflict in what we're pursuing here. And that actually, I think, created a lot of the reasons that we wrote the 80-80 marriage, is because we wanted to target, hey, if you are equals and you're doing big things and you are busy and you carry supercomputers in your pocket and you want to be in love, how can you do that? And when we looked out, there weren't good answers. And that's how the 80-80 marriage was born.
Well, it sounds like we might want to change the mission of Stanford then, because we are sending our graduates off on a collision course in their relationships.
Well, I think they can be totally compatible. We just needed a new technology that we didn't yet have, and hopefully we've created it.
All right. So before we get into the book itself, which I thought was a fantastic read, you're a married couple who have co-authored a book. Now, that could be the focus of an entire Pathfinder show in and of itself. What was it like working together as a married couple on this book and working on a book together about marriage? I mean, could you leave work at the office, or was this 24/7?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And it's funny because for the first 12 years or so of our marriage, we had this rule. We called it the wall of separation between Kaylee and Nate when it came to career. Like, we were very clear, we did not ever want to work together because we thought it would undermine our relationship and we liked having separate careers.
Oops.
But then we came up with this idea and we both felt really drawn to the concept and the idea of writing the book. So all of a sudden, here we are working together, and it was very intense. But, you know, it ended up actually being like the perfect laboratory for living the practices in this book, because it just amplified the intensity of everything. And so all of a sudden, we really had to dig in and almost test day by day these practices. And then in terms of leaving our work at home, the last couple months of revision on the book, which were the most intense months, were the first couple months of the pandemic. So there was no leaving anything at home. We were completely stuck. Our daughter was doing homeschool. And here we are racing to the finish line of the book. So, but there again, it was kind of like the perfect pressure test for these ideas.
And speaking of pressure testing, is your marriage stronger today than it was before you started writing a book, or the same, or dare I say less?
Risky to say less. It's kind of a loaded question, but I think it's actually, it's better, because anytime something showed up in our relationship, we ran it through 80-80, mostly because we wanted to make sure that it actually worked. And so it feels like, in some ways, leaving the book at the office was impossible. It was such a meta project. So everything that we faced, we ran it through. And I think it has made us much stronger.
Yeah.
All right. So your book is entitled The 80-80 Marriage, A New Model for a Happier, Stronger Relationship. But I got to tell you, bookstores are filled to the brim with marriage self-help books. So what made you decide that you had something new to say on this topic? I mean, hasn't everything that can be said about marriage already been said?
Yeah, it's tempting to think that. So we love a lot of the books that are already out there, right? We were just talking earlier about John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, The Gottmans. Like, there are great books out there, but there wasn't a book that was answering this question, how do you stay equals and in love? That there were some about attachment theory, about how to be a better listener, but nobody had really looked at how do you make sure that your mindset and the structure that you use to implement it fits in this modern context? And so what we thought we had to add to this genre that, to your point, is quite full, is a look at it more from a structural and a systemic perspective, and some exercises to help people apply these tools in a way that was directive enough that they knew they were going to get to a good place, but also open enough that they could make it uniquely tailored to them.
Did your family and friends think you were crazy writing this book?
Yes, they did think we were crazy. And one of the really unexpected things that happened during the process was we would tell people, hey, we're thinking of writing this book on marriage. And they would immediately jump into some story about, you know, I had this friend, they were doing a podcast on marriage, they got divorced a year later, right? So, so it brought out all these weird stories about how the belief seemed to be, if you write this book on marriage, you will get divorced. And not only that, the entire world will be laughing at you as you get divorced because you had the audacity to write a book on marriage. So yes, that was definitely something we encountered.
And notwithstanding those challenges, you still took this on. So you not only took it on, but you got pretty personal. in the introduction to the book by talking about the struggles you have had in your marriage. Was that difficult to share in such a public, published way? Or is that fundamentally part of the journey that you had to take?
Yeah, it felt like an important part of the journey. And, you know, in some ways, this connects back to Stanford. Our experience when we were at Stanford was, it was just, you know, you're friends with all these amazing people, everybody's doing amazing things. And there's this kind of mindset of effortless success that we experienced where, you know, you ask someone how their weekend was and they told you about surfing, but not about being at the library for 12 hours. And there's a way in which, you know, there's a kind of withholding of vulnerability that, you know, I think it's important to share those moments when we're stuck. So we, as you said in the introduction and throughout the book, we wanted to share the fact that we were stuck, really stuck at various points in our marriage. And we thought that would be important because, you know, that was our journey. And the one other thing I would say is that we also didn't want this to be a book about Kaylee and Nate's marriage. So we actually used that as an opportunity to interview about 100 other people because we really wanted this to be about modern marriage writ large, you know, not just about our experience, but certainly our experience was important to the project.
So the Stanford listeners in the audience will know that there's this thing called the duck syndrome at Stanford, right? Where everyone thinks, it looks like everyone's gliding effortlessly along the water, but below everyone's spinning, right, to get somewhere. And so marriages are a lot that way, aren't they? That people look at a marriage, you never really know about a marriage by looking at it from the outside. It's only by being inside the marriage that you really understand what's happening.
And what's really been interesting in this project, you're exactly right. You hit the nail completely on the head. Is that if, for instance, someone's reading a parenting book, no one looks at them as like, ooh, I think that might be an indicator that you're failing as a parent. And yet there's a way that when people read marriage books, there's sometimes a question mark like, well, are we okay? Is there something wrong? And I think that part of what we're interested in is kind of this duck thing that marriage is not effortless. Marriage requires effort. Marriage requires inquiry. Marriage requires tools. And how can we make those accessible and friendly in a way that doesn't indicate there's a problem, but rather how can we intentionally give names to some of the things that we're doing and also have tools for some of the things that we want to create?
I've been married for 35 years. And when I got married, all the talk was about egalitarian marriages, where roles and responsibilities are split equally on a 50-50 basis. That was the ideal to which we all aspired. But your book sort of takes a shot at that and says, that doesn't work. So why does the old adage about 50-50 egalitarian marriages no longer work?
Well, first of all, congrats on being married for 35 years. That's amazing.
Thank you.
The idea of 50-50 really is the starting point of the book in many ways. And it was the starting point of our marriage because, as Kaylee said earlier, we both came out of Stanford. We were both ambitious. We viewed each other as equals. So we sort of fell into this cultural habit, which is kind of the go-to solution to how to be 50-50, which is trying to make everything perfectly fair. And it ended up being a disaster, essentially, when it came to love and connection, because all of this scorekeeping leads to conflict and resentment. And I think the really interesting thing we discovered in this project, we started looking at the literature and psychology on this, is that our perceptions of fairness are clouded by all sorts of cognitive biases that make it almost impossible to determine what is or isn't fair. So on the one hand, there's availability bias, which is kind of just a fancy way of saying that I am intimately familiar with everything that I do. But when it comes to what Kaylee does, you know, all her trips to the store or whatever, I'm not really that clear on that. It's a little blurry. And then there's another cognitive bias, which is overestimation. So they found that we have this tendency when it comes to housework and childcare to systematically overestimate our own contributions. So basically, I'm underestimating what Kaylee does. I'm overestimating what I do. Then we're having these arguments about what is or isn't fair based on bad data. And it just leads to constant conflict rather than love and connection.
I think there's something interesting that we also found in the interviews, which is if you ask people directly, hey, do you ever fight about fairness? Most of them will say no. But if you actually stay in the interview, like we did with these 100 people, they then actually reveal sort of this undercurrent of fairness that will show up. Well, I don't know why we spend so much time with his family versus my family. And you can sort of hear in there the complaint, like, well, that's not fair. Or I don't know why you get to go running on Saturdays when I'm playing with the kids. Well, that's not fair. And again, to Nate's point, we're also comparing things that actually don't make any sense. Is getting up in the middle of the night to comfort a kid who's having a nightmare, which may or may not have happened last night at our house, the same or, you know, different? Like, does that cancel out unloading the dishwasher in the morning? Like, it's a compromise or sort of a calculation that doesn't make any sense.
All right. So let's get into it. What exactly is an 80-80 marriage? Because we've learned that 50-50 marriages don't work. So what's an 80-80 marriage, and what's the different way of doing marriage that thriving couples embrace? What is this different way?
So the 80-80 marriage is a shift out of 50-50 fairness in two different ways. So one is about your mindset, and two is about your structure. So really what we're talking about here, and the numbers at a certain point don't actually make sense. So we're leaving, trying to make it perfectly even, and instead striving to contribute more than my fair share, striving to hold a mindset of radical generosity. Can I give 80%? And really the foundation of that is three pieces: contribution, what do I do? Appreciation, what do I see? And revealing, what do I say? But mindset is only half, right? If you have this ideal mindset of radical generosity, then how do you implement that in the world? What's the structure of your relationship? And that starts with, what are your shared values? And those determine, what are your priorities? What are your boundaries? So what do you say yes to? What do you say no to? What are your roles? How do you balance power? And in having both a mindset of radical generosity and a structure that's organized around shared success. So what it feels like is, when I win, you win. We're dropping the competition between us and instead really aligning as a team. That's how you get to full 80-80.
I want to talk about radical generosity in a second, but first I want to ask you a question about 80-80, because I really want to get this concept down in my mind and in the listeners' minds. Is it that you're trying to go 80% of the way there because you know you're going to cheat? And so you'll end up at something like 50 or maybe 55. And the goal is you're not going to fully overlap 30%, but you might overlap 5 or 10%. And therefore it'll look like you're going well beyond 50%. I don't mean to be too arithmetical.
No, I love that. No, it's a great question, and it's a both and. It's by striving for 80%, you're probably going to land closer to 50. So yes to your question. And if I'm striving for 80, then I can stop scorekeeping. I can stop keeping track of, well, I did this and so you did that. And so we have to keep it perfectly even. And by intentionally going above and beyond, if you do more, then that's great. It's a gift to you. It's a gift to your partner. It's a gift to the relationship, rather than cause for resentment or a fight.
This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf. More with Kaylee and Nate Klemp, authors of The 80-80 Marriage, next. This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf, and I'm speaking with Kaylee and Nate Klemp about a new model for a happier, stronger relationship. All right, let's talk about radical generosity, because that's a big theme. Your answer you just gave me was a big part of that answer, but it's also a big theme in the book. It's a fascinating sort of combination of words. Radical generosity. Could you unpack that a little bit more for us?
It's really one of the key concepts, especially around this mindset shift that Kaylee was talking about. And I think the way to understand it is by going back to 50-50. You know, our default wiring in this culture in marriage is to make everything fair. So to be generous and do more than your fair share is in some ways completely irrational and insane when viewed from the mindset of 50-50, right? So there's a way in which generosity is counter-habitual, it's counter-cultural. And so that's where the word radical came from for us, is we realized we're kind of going against our wiring here. There's something really interesting about this idea of generosity, something really radical about it. And one of the things we like to talk about is, you know, even though it seems crazy and it seems like I'm doing more than my fair share and maybe I'm being taken advantage of, there's really two amazing things that happen when you can make the shift. So one is it changes my experience of marriage. So if I'm doing the dishes and I'm thinking about how it's the third night in a row and Kaylee hasn't done her fair share, I'm bathing myself in stress and cortisol. And if I can make this shift, all of a sudden my experience in that moment is totally different, right? It brings some ease to my own experience and a sense of love and contribution. But then when it comes to the culture of marriage itself, it has this contagious effect that we saw again and again in our interviews, where one radically generous act leads to another by your partner. And then it creates what we think of as a kind of upward spiral of generosity, which I know sounds crazy and almost too good to be true, but we've seen this happen again and again in our life and in the lives of the people we interviewed.
So you talk about marriage being a team sport. So I've played many team sports over the years, even played one at Stanford, but I didn't realize until reading your book that my marriage was supposed to be a team sport. What does that even mean?
Yeah. Well, so the big idea with marriage being a team sport is when you're on an actual sort of sports team, you don't care who shoots the basket that has the team win the game. You care that the team won, right? In the same way that if you're playing, for instance, football, everyone is not trying to steal the football out of the quarterback's hands and throw it, right? There's an idea of, hey, we are all in this together. And as we work as a unit, we actually accomplish more. We score more points or goals or whatever the metric is in the sport that you're playing. In marriage, if we pursue it as individuals, we end up competing with each other. And so instead of trying to make it, it was my accomplishment or it was my goal, when marriage is a team sport, when Nate has a phenomenal day, I feel like I win. When I land a new client, we win as a family. And so that's the idea, is framing it as how do we win together? That's the team sport.
You end the book by suggesting that marriage is essentially a collection of habits. And then you suggest five essential habits to the reader. Now, the book is all worth reading, but those five habits, I spent a lot of time looking over those five habits. What are these five habits that we should all adopt?
Absolutely. I'm so happy that you spent time in the habits chapter. I love that. So the first is to create space for connection, that because of the backdrop of busyness that so many couples experience, if there isn't intentional time carved out for connection, often our intimate relationships fall to the bottom of the priority list. So that one is absolutely number one.
So you schedule it, or what does that mean?
Yeah, I think often it's about scheduling it, because let's face it, our calendars are full. And if you don't schedule it, it often doesn't happen for couples. So scheduling a date night, scheduling a date hike, one of our favorites, just, you know, anytime, or, you know, longer periods, if you can, maybe once or twice a year for a weekend.
And this is a family show, but scheduling intimacy.
Absolutely. That, again, it isn't necessarily on its face the most sexy thing, but there's actually a hidden benefit in scheduling intimacy, which is the anticipation that you get to build. So if you send a text to your partner that suggests like what might happen that evening, there's a way that it starts to build the connection and it get you ready for that, versus the like, oh my gosh, I've been running 1,000 miles a second. It's the end of the day. Like, how you feeling? Right? Where both people are exhausted.
All right. Second habit.
All right. Second is radical generosity and appreciation. We really think about this as sort of the call and response of that mindset. So every day, can you contribute one thing to your partner, and can you catch them in the act of doing something good? So every day, do one act of generosity and appreciate your partner.
Yeah. And then the third is this habit of revealing the hard truths. And this is a really important one. It's often somewhat uncomfortable, but what we found is if you quickly reveal those moments of frustration or disappointment or hurt feelings, you can get back to connection really quickly. And actually, you can use these as opportunities to connect. If you don't, these little micro ruptures of connection get bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden, you're dealing with a pretty major problem.
Or they fester over time, in which case, fixing them is 10 times as hard.
Absolutely. You know, if you can kind of nip something in the bud through a reveal, then it doesn't have a chance to snowball and become something much more difficult to unravel.
Fantastic. Fantastic. All right, next one.
All right, so number four is, we call them the shared success check-ins. And basically it's just continuing to make sure that you're aligned on your values, on your priorities, on your roles. And it's been interesting that I would sort of love to say that they got to be one and done. And yet we find that nearly every week on our date hike, we're having some sort of conversation about a choice that we're making and how it does or doesn't fit into our top priorities.
And the final one, the fifth one.
The final one is creating space from distraction. And this gets to that point of the modern context that we're living in. You know, some of the most heartbreaking stories we heard when we interviewed couples weren't necessarily like the big divorces or, you know, the affairs, but they were couples who loved each other, but somehow at the end of the day, they found themselves sitting on opposite sides of the couch or sitting in bed together, both scrolling their Instagram feeds or the news or whatever, and finding it almost impossible to connect. So, you know, these are simple things like kicking your phones out of your bedroom, kicking your phones off the dinner table. I mean, you can lock your phones in a box if you have to. For some people, the addiction is that strong, right? But it's basically recognizing that we're in a very unique time of human history where we're experiencing a kind of neural addiction to our devices, and that really undermines connection.
All right, I'll give you 30 seconds for this question. Any single final suggestion to our married listeners who are struggling in their marriages?
I would say, do the contribution and appreciation. And if you can only do one, appreciate. Every day, go on a scavenger hunt looking for one thing that your partner did that was great and tell them about it.
All right, final question. I loved your book. I think this book can change lives. Where can people find out more about the 80-80 marriage, and where can they get a copy of the book?
Yeah, well, thank you for having us and for your enthusiasm about the book. That means a lot. The best way to find the book is any major seller online, brick and mortar, you can find the book. To find out more about some of the other things we're up to, our website is 8080marriage.com. We have a free newsletter.
The numeral is 8080?
Yeah, 8080marriage.com. So we have a free newsletter, some date night guides. We're also on Instagram quite a bit. Same 8080marriage, 8080marriage on Instagram.
Kaylee, Nate, thank you so much for being on the show. You were fantastic.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to Stanford Pathfinders on SiriusXM. Listen to this and other episodes anytime, on demand with the SiriusXM app or wherever you like to find your podcasts.